In 1983, Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein founded the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, also known as the Fellowship. He devoted his life to building bridges of understanding and cooperation between Christians and Jews and broad support for the State of Israel. After more than 35 years as founder and president of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein passed away unexpectedly at his home in Israel. Today, the ministry he founded continues its life-saving ministry and bridge-building work under the leadership of Rabbi Eckstein's daughter, Yael Eckstein, who stepped into her father's role as president and CEO of the Fellowship. Welcome to our Fellowship Tribute Radio Special, remembering the life of Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein. Yael Eckstein recently sat down to talk with the man who knew Rabbi Eckstein the best, and who witnessed his many ups and downs in forging this difficult and often lonely path, Rabbi Eckstein's brother, Beryl Eckstein. Let's listen.
On February 6, 2019, my father, my Abba, Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein, died suddenly from a heart attack. My father was the founder of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, and I had the blessing of working alongside him for almost 15 years. When he passed away, I lost both a loving parent and my mentor. I want to celebrate my father's life and his groundbreaking work by focusing on who he was and the contribution that he made to the world. And to do that, I couldn't think of a better guest than another exceptional member of my family, my father's beloved younger brother and my uncle, Uncle Beryl Eckstein. Few people knew my father better. Beryl saw my father through it all, from the beginning of the fellowship through the difficult early years to the years of unprecedented success. Beryl has led a remarkable life too. He was born in Ottawa, Canada, the youngest son of my grandparents, Rabbi Simon and Belle Eckstein. Like my father, he went to Yeshiva University in New York City, and he chose to pursue a career in the commodity trading industry. After working for the legendary Philip Brothers firm, Beryl and some colleagues started their own firm, Trafigura, which today is one of the three largest trading companies in the world. Uncle Beryl, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Yael, and thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts of my brother and your father.
I'd love to hear a story that captures the kind of person that my father was.
Your father was full of energy. He was always full of energy from the beginning, and he was always in the light. And I, if you'll excuse me if I sing one stanza from a song you never heard. Out of the night, when the full moon is bright, comes a horse that's known as Zorro. That was all I heard as a kid. Zorro. Have you ever heard of Zorro?
I have from that song have heard before, yeah.
So my brother would go around, have a mask on his face and a cape on his back, and he would do the Z. He had a sword and he would go zzzzzz, and he would save the world. And we grew up with that. He was always Zorro. He was full of energy. He was the life of the party. He was not shy. He was not shy as a child. That is for sure. You know, I was Superman, you know, but he was Zorro.
He was Zorro. Okay.
He was Zorro. So saving the world. There's another thing that as far as childhood memories that I have, sitting around the Sabbath table, my father was a rabbi, didn't make a lot of money, but he knew his priorities. And we went to Camp Morasha, and driving up, we didn't have suitcases. What we used to do is everyone had a plastic bag with their clothes, and the trunk was filled with clothes, and the car was filled with clothes. And we would sit down first, and then my father would put bags of more clothes. They were not mine. They were all my sister's. And we would sit in the back of the car, and we would sing the whole way up to camp. Literally hours of singing together. It was fun. If you talk about my childhood, is very different than Yechiel's. My childhood was all fun.
It's often that way in families, that the oldest and the youngest have a very different experience with their childhood, with the parents being in a different place and different experience with the siblings. But I love hearing your perspective on it and your memories, just as the younger brother who had this fun, loving, had fun together, in a way it was very traditional. In a way it was what a lot of Jewish families in America and Canada go through, going to their synagogue, being part of the Jewish school, going to a Jewish camp, having the Shabbat, being involved in community. And so when my father began working with Christians to support Israel and the Jewish people, it wasn't as typical as his childhood was. He ruffled a lot of feathers in the Jewish community. How did those closest to him react to his vision of building bridges between Christians and Jews that at that point was a totally new concept and in a way was totally taboo?
Yechiel was always brilliant. He always was, even from childhood. And it was obvious that he was a star. But he was also very independent. He would take advice. Rarely, but he would take advice, but he was always the decision maker. He did what he wanted to and what he felt comfortable with, and then he would tell us. We always supported him, even if there were doubts or a lack, I would say actually at the beginning, a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
The criticism that he faced came a lot later, and you probably felt it more at the beginning than we did, or that I did. For many years, we were oblivious to what was going on. We grew up in a city, as I said, a small Jewish community. We all had friends who weren't Jewish. Our best friends weren't Jewish. And Yechiel actually had a friend down the block who later became a priest. Yechiel would tell us he was reaching out to non-Jews to work together to make the world a better place. You know, how could that be anything bad? He said he was forging unity, and only later did we appreciate the magnitude of what he was doing. When Abraham went with Isaac, there's a place right near where he lived, where Abraham looked out at the Mount of Zion, the Temple Mount, the Mount of Olives. And he said, the Bible says, Vayaret ha-makom me-rachok, and he saw the place from far. And that is what life is. And that was what his life was. He saw his goal and he was going for that goal, but he needed someone to go with him. Vayelchu shneim yachdav, you have to go together with someone. And he didn't find it in the Jewish community. There were probably one or two people that worked with him at the beginning, but it was really the evangelical community that joined with him. And he became oblivious to everything else for a time, and he just concentrated on moving ahead.
Yechiel had...
It was a calling. Yechiel had a vision, and his vision was a picture that he actually picked up once in China of mountains that he hit up. And he really believed that he was on a mission, a goal, and he wouldn't let anything else ruffle his feathers. That lasted for a while, but it didn't last forever. At a certain time, it started to get to him as time would go on, and he became more impacted by the criticism that came. A few times in my mind, memories that I have that really were impactful to him, he faced criticism in his own community when he wasn't able to study the Talmud the same way. People were saying, we don't want you to study with us. He was starting then to be ostracized from the community that he really felt was his community. And he took that very hard. I was with him actually at a very traumatic moment for him when the Rabbinical Council of America at one of their conventions, one of the rabbis got up and specifically put a ban on him. I was with him in the car. I remember specifically where I was and how hurt he was, how angered he was. And he said, they simply don't get it.
Right.
And the wild thing is that all those people who criticized him, all those people came around, they became his, not benefactors, they became his supporters in everything he did. And they realized that they were simply on the wrong side of history. And, you know, he had a mission and they appreciated the mission. And I think that was across the board.
Yeah, yeah. I look at it really as three different stages as I hear you talking. In the beginning, that people just didn't get it were the words that you used. And I think that's really perfect. It's not even that they rejected it. They didn't understand.
Ignorance is the word I would say.
And a lack of vision and dreaming. It's something that's never been done. That, you know, when people said, I remember him telling me when he would tell people in the Jewish community, I'm working with Christians to support Israel. And they'd say, oh, what do they want to do? Convert us or kill us? He said, no, it's a new reality. You have to be open to a new reality besides that of what you read in the history books. They're reaching out their hands, and we have a choice now. Do we want to reach out our hands in return or not, and have strategic friends and partners that the Jewish people have never had before, and the Christian community to have this opportunity to be part of biblical prophecy coming to fruition, the land of Israel helping and standing with the Jewish people. And there's so much that we have to grow together, to learn together, and to accomplish together. And so I look at it really as that first stage that people didn't even understand what my father's vision was. They just rejected it. And then there was a second stage when the fellowship started raising funds and distributing it to different causes to help Jewish people in need, Aliyah, and helping Jews in the former Soviet Union. And then suddenly the Jewish community, in a way, still didn't understand it, but they were willing to hear it and accept it. And then the third stage, I think, happened pretty recently, where suddenly the entirety of the Jewish people got it, that this is bigger than donations. This is bigger than helping the poor, even though the fellowship is the largest philanthropic organization in Israel. This represents itself in creating a stronger world and a stronger future for our children, whether it's moving the American embassy to Jerusalem or recognizing the Golan Heights, or that Israel is our greatest ally in a time when there's so much divisiveness. There are these individual and community of Christians who stand together with one agenda to help Israel and the Jewish people. And that is something that my father in the beginning saw, but took the Jewish community so many years in order to really understand this vision that he had.
There was a time in there that I remember I went with Yechiel and a group of evangelical Christians, and people were waiting to talk to him and sign a book that he had. And someone came over to me and he said, "You're obviously Yechiel's brother." And I said, "Yeah, we look alike." And he said, "I have something for him." And he said, "I'm Mexican. I just sold my taxi cab business and I want to give my 10% to the rabbi." And he gave me a manila envelope with cash in it. And I said, "Do you want a receipt?" He goes, "No, I'm not going to have a chance to meet the rabbi." And I tried to take him over, but he didn't want to go. And he said, "This is for the rabbi's work." And that was really the time in my life where I realized things were different.
One of the greatest gifts, I think, that I learned from my father was how he never brought the stress of his work home with him. When he walked in the door, he was just Abba. He wasn't the president of an organization. He didn't either bring that pride back, nor did he bring the stress. But do you remember what it was like for him in those early days when he struggled? Did he ever talk to you about it?
At the beginning, he was just on a mission. And he realized early on that he couldn't do it alone. I think as time went on, you don't get criticism till you're meaningful. In other words, when you're on your own and you're talking to some people and you're forging, you know, like friendships, no one really cares. His stress at that point was pure financial in my mind. It was, how can I keep this thing going? I really believe in it. Is it going to happen? He was able to deal with people not accepting him and not agreeing with him in America because he knew he was right. When he came to Israel, it was a different reality. He saw that people were actually against him. Not that they didn't agree him, but they were against him to the point where he had posters plastered up against him, to the point where he needed Shin Bet security.
He had
death threats. He needed security. That was a very stressful point of his life.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And he didn't really know what to do with it. I remember the Israeli government told him he should have security. There were significant death threats against him, and they were posted on his house and at the office. And I remember him talking to me about it and saying, I'm not going to get a security guard, because if somebody tried to do something to me, what would the security do? Kill him? I don't want to be responsible for anyone's death. And that's something that stayed with me. That's the reason why he didn't have a security guard.
I always say he was a lot like Joseph. You know, Joseph went, he says, "Et achai ani mevakesh. I'm going to look for my brothers." He had a search, a meaning in life. But yet, like Joseph, in so many ways, he was a dreamer. He was just like him. He was misunderstood by his people, by his own brothers. And he was maligned by his own people. But in the end, he rose to greatness. And in the end, his brothers, not that they bowed down to him, but in the end, they knew he was right. And that's really history. It's really history. But the stress, you talk about the stress, it came in a very difficult point in his life. And it came a point where he was alone. He came to Israel alone, and he felt alone. He did have something he found comfort in. He found comfort, or maybe he became more intense, listening to a song, which he listened to maybe 20, 30 times a day. It was a song by Sarit Haddad called Shema Yisrael. And I'll read you the words. It says, "When the heart cries, only God hears. The pain rises out of a soul. A man falls down before he sinks. With a little prayer, he cuts the silence. Shema Yisrael, my God, you're the omnipotent. You gave me life. You gave me everything." And it's kshehalev boche, when the heart cries, you find comfort in God. And that was your father. He was in pain. For that time, it was really hard. He was on a mission from God, and he felt alone, and people were criticizing him. And he was able to pick himself up. And you know what? Even when he was, you know, scared, or even when he was stressed, he would pick himself up and continue his mission, and he didn't let it deter him. So he was really special.
Yeah. And life was busy for both of you, with kids, with work, with traveling. How did you stay connected to each other?
We stayed connected all the time. We never missed the Shabbos call the same way he didn't do with you. And no matter how busy he was, he had a particular time when he was very tense for some reason, which I never understood, but he was extremely tense writing his speeches for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
Yes.
The guy spoke to a million people a year, but when he prepared his speeches before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he was a wreck. You could see it. But yet he'd be in a meeting, all tense, and then he said, "My kid brother's on the phone." He always referred to me as his kid brother. And we never missed a week. And he used to call me my kid brother. And when I was 50 years old, he'd say, "I can't believe you started shaving already." he always looked at me as his little brother, but he was always proud of me. And I used to do something that, especially when I retired, we shared the blessings of life together. And he would tell me wherever he was, what he's doing. And I would go for a run on the beach pretty much a couple of times a week. And every time, well, not every time I would do it, but at least once a week, I would call him up and I'd FaceTime with him and I'd say, "Living the blessings of God." And I would just take the camera and I would point to the beach. And actually, we have both felt a lot of comfort in water in general. It's an Eckstein thing to really enjoy the swimming in the beach. But we all felt that we were blessed. And he wanted to share his blessings with me. And I always did with him. And we never miss. Never miss.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, that was those pre-Shabbat calls were sacred for him. Yeah, I've gotten calls from, I think, everywhere in the world. "I only have 30 seconds. There's no connection here, but Shabbat Shalom."
He had a way before Shabbos. he would speak to all of us and never miss.
Right.
And yet what he would do is he would pretty much shut off his iPhone, shut off his computer, and detox almost before Shabbos. And he would get into the mood for Shabbos. He had an ability to bring in another soul into his life, his own soul, the Shabbos soul. And he would sit on the chair, he would sing, he would speak to us, and he would get ready for the Sabbath. And he would welcome it as another soulful part of his life. At the end of Sabbath, he would cry because he didn't want that uniqueness in his life, his love of God, his love of people, his love of the Sabbath. He didn't want it to leave because he knew reality was just minutes away. And he really was able to bring that part of his life and make it special for him and for everyone around him.
Wow. Yeah, definitely the Shabbos was the time when he shined. He had an amazing way of putting everything on the side, all of the stress, all of the worries, and really being present within that, which is something I try to always remember and learn from as well.
Mindfulness, living in the moment.
Present. Yes, 100%, 100%. So Uncle Beryl, how would you sum up my father's legacy to the world?
That's a little harder, his legacy. I think that, you know, I mean, clearly there is the simple legacy, which I'll call the legacy that the world will always see. And then there's my legacy that I have with him. He changed history. It's just simple to say it that way. He changed history. He was the first to reach out to the evangelical community. And he was the only one for many, many years. As we spoke about before, he reached out and he reached out alone. And it took a long time for people to appreciate him. And so to me, his legacy is twofold. As far as the public legacy, his legacy is both reaching out and building bridges with the evangelical community and introducing that friendship, that bond to the world, South America, Korea, Middle East. The fact that there are relations between other religions, I believe, is all because of his work. For me, it's all his soul, his caring for people, for each individual, for family, for the land of Israel, for the people of Israel, and also for the Torah of Israel. Just his soul is what I miss. To me, his legacy was an angel. He really was a special person that we were gifted to have as such a close relative. He was an angel sent by God, and he filled his mission, and he fulfilled his legacy that which you carry on. But it's his soul that I remember. His warmth and his caring and his love. Love was who he was. He really loved it. Talked about evangelicals, it's love. Talk about charity, it's love. Talk about family, it's love. He was an angel sent by God.
Beautiful. Definitely, I think that summarizes him very well, those two identities of both the personal and the family, where he was fully present there and fully committed and fully passionate and fully supportive. And then the other side of at work and with the mission, being led with this vision to be fully present there, but really overriding both of them was this being driven by love and by a connection to God, that he knew his calling and felt oftentimes burdened by it, to be honest, but more often than that, being privileged to be able to be completing this mission that he had in life.
I'll talk about one time where I think about him all the time, and this really sums up who Yechiel was to me. When we pray Saturday morning, we, as he did, I do the same thing. I take my tallit, I wrap it around my body, I put it over my head, and I close off myself from the world. And I sing, Nishmat Kol Chai, Tivarech Et Shimcha. And I talk about, in prayer, the soul of the person that prays to God. And that's who he was. That's who I try to be. That's how I remember him. A special soul who prays to God.
Thank you, Uncle Beryl. Thank you so much. I thank you for sharing another side of my father with the world.
What you've been listening to is Yael Eckstein, President and CEO of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, as she pays tribute to the life and legacy of her father, Fellowship founder Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein, along with her special guest, Beryl Eckstein, Yael's uncle and Rabbi Eckstein's brother. Rabbi Eckstein built bridges that challenged history, defined convention, and ultimately brought healing to the world. Today, the ministry he founded blesses millions of Christians and Jews around the world and is the largest channel of Christian support for Israel. Through the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, Christians are partaking in the blessing found in the Bible that says God will bless those who bless his people, Genesis 12:3. They are fulfilling prophecy by helping Jews return to the promised land of Israel, Isaiah 49:22. They are observing God's true fast by feeding hungry Holocaust survivors, Isaiah 58:6 and 7. And they are praying for the peace of Jerusalem by providing security to those threatened in Israel, Psalm 122:6. None of this would have happened were it not for the calling, courage, and commitment of one man. Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein's life was a testament to the simple fact, once someone has been touched by God, amazing things can happen. Thank you for listening to our Fellowship Tribute Radio Special, remembering the life of Rabbi Yekiel Eckstein. Learn how you can honor Rabbi Eckstein's legacy by visiting ifcj.org/rabbi. That's ifcj.org/rabbi. May God bless you.